Welcome to Highly Questionable. I'm Katie Nolan. Pablo Torre has yet to figure out how to use a ring light here in week 75 of this setup. And Mina Kimes is frozen. Let's get started.
Yeah, at least I'm not her.
Did the Nets look better or worse last night with Kyrie back?
Yeah, it's a good question. Kyrie made his return after a two-week hiatus, so we finally got to see this new big three and figure out how it was going to work. He had a pretty good game. The big three looked okay, but at the end of the day, they let up a lot of points to Cleveland, who has the worst offense by a lot of metrics. Another interesting thing, this is Kyrie's first time playing in Cleveland since 2017, which means we got a tribute video, which felt kind of strange because it was quite some time ago. But it was interesting to watch Kyrie wearing number two for Cleveland go off on video and then watch number two for Cleveland go off in the game. That would be the mayor of Sex Town, Sexland?
Sexland.
Sexbird.
Colin Sexton went off. So I'm curious to know, Pablo, what you thought of the big three last night.
Yeah, I'm still sort of reeling from what Colin Sexton did because, look, on the one hand, it is great that Kyrie Irving came back. There were a lot of rumors, to be quite honest, about retirement. That's what the world's most highly paid high school cafeteria had been talking about, honestly, for 2 weeks, is will we ever see Kyrie again? So amazing that he's back and he is still excellent. But the Colin Sexton angle on all of this, Colin Sexton was also the guy they got back as a draft pick in the Kyrie trade. He's also the guy last night who was wearing Kyrie Irving signature shoes, which is a very strange experience for Kyrie Irving and all the things going on in his mind. And Colin Sexton in general is just a fascinating dude because as of 2019, there was an argument that he was historically having one of the worst NBA seasons we've ever seen. And this is the same guy who 2 years before that in college at Alabama played a game in which Alabama had lost all but three players. So they were playing 3-on-5 against Minnesota for 10 minutes, and they outscored Minnesota. Like, Colin Sexton is a totally confusing human being who could take on a team by himself, and he basically did that against the Nets. So I'm inclined to just say that this is sort of a one-off special thing just because of all those circumstances.
Well, he's improved a lot, and it's almost like we shouldn't judge rookies in the NBA immediately and give them some time to develop. I don't know. But the question was about the Nets and whether we should be worried about the Nets. It was one game, right? Like, I agree the lack of defense is concerning and could be an issue, but we're talking about a group of guys, a guy in James Harden who just blew up his team, a guy in Kevin Durant who recently blew up his Achilles, and a player named Kyrie Irving who blew up all of our collective brains by walking away from basketball for a couple of weeks. It's going to take a moment for all these pieces to come back together. To me, the bigger concern from last night's loss was how badly their bench got outscored, 44-10, because in that trade, they gave up a lot of depth, and while they've got a big three of superstars, that could hurt the Nets down the road.
I will also say Steve Nash, after the game, echoed that idea of patience, of give us some patience, this is going to take some time, which I completely agree with and have said myself before. But what concerned me was that he alluded to the fact that it's going to take all season for them to figure it out, and I don't think basketball fans want to wait a year to figure out if this big three is going to be the big three we want to watch.
But you know who could wait a year? People who produce sports talk television shows that really need an A1 topic to begin their program.
Yes, chaos.
Should the Packers be worried that Aaron Rodgers called his future a beautiful mystery?
Okay, well, we don't have video of him saying it. I believe it was said during his media availability. But for the sake of honesty and transparency, I'm just going to read the quote that I have directly off of my phone because that's how TV works. What he said was he's thankful for the opportunity, again, to be leading these guys, to play the way he wants to play, to be called upon for a greater leadership role. Those things are really, really important to me. But all that other stuff, ellipses is stuff that I'm just not going to focus on, because to me, it is a beautiful mystery what happens down the line. But there'll be a time when we meet that future. And right now, I'm just going to enjoy the present. So the question being, should we be concerned that he said he doesn't know what his future looks like? And to me, no. Because nobody knows what their future looks like. The man is saying that he's focused on the present, that he has a big game coming up. It has always been fascinating to me that we ask players these big life questions when we get media availability, because we want to know the answers. But then we also talk about how they need to be mentally focused on the game. And if they aren't, then they lose. And then we yell at them for not being mentally focused on the game. Aaron Rodgers sounds like someone to me who is focused on what he has to do right now. And if he can get that done, because it's clearly something he wants for his future. But as for what his future holds, sure, I'm sure that both of you will come up with things that he could possibly be saying. But I choose to take him at his word. He's focused on the present. He has a big game coming up.
Look, Packers fans, I can see why they're a little concerned, because in the past, when Aaron's been asked about his future, he has actually said, I want to be a Packer for life. Now he's like, I mean, who's to know what the future holds? Ladies, we've heard that one before, right? I don't think he's going anywhere because, well, money. He's got a lot of money left on his contract. But also, if Aaron Rodgers wants to win, he's very competitive, he's in a great situation in Green Bay. Like, there's no reason for him to demand a trade or force his way out or even desire to play for another team, because right now he is on a team that is firmly in its Super Bowl window.
Yeah, he's trolling his own front office, right? I mean, they drafted Jordan Love in the first round with this idea that Aaron Rodgers maybe would never actually get to live out that future he had described, that Mina alluded to, in Green Bay. And now, because he is as good as we've ever seen Aaron Rodgers, he knows that you guys absolutely need me, and also that it's weird that you guys who drafted Jordan Love can feel good about me, Aaron Rodgers, being really good, as if you motivated me to do this, right? Like, they're still kind of, I think, sitting pretty because, hey, Aaron Rodgers is peak performance, so maybe we can credit ourselves for drafting the guy who spurred him to do that, all of which would make me, if I'm Aaron Rodgers, feel a little weird about that. But the other thing that I feel weird about with this story is that Aaron Rodgers, as much as there is a certain depth and profundity to being present and not stuck in the future, like, it's very zen, I aspire to that. It also feels like one of those like wood carvings you'll find in the basement of someone's mom's house. Like, the past is history. The future is a mystery. Now is a gift. And that's why they call it the present.
That's right. It's the live, laugh, love of old basement wooden scriptures, carvings. Mina, I'm curious to know if you said Davante Adams basically said they want to win this Super Bowl for Aaron because he deserves to have another one, because when he's constantly compared to Tom Brady, he's like, it's almost as if Super Bowl wins are a QB stat, which immediately perked my ears up, because I know you've got strong opinions on wins being QB stats.
Yeah, that's dumb. It sounds like Davante Adams has been watching a lot of sports television. Davante, wins, they're not a way to evaluate quarterback performance. Those of us who, you know, do not die on Ring Mountain will respect Aaron Rodgers regardless of whether he wins the Super Bowl.
Oh, I'm going to die on Ring Mountain, aren't I?
Is John Harbaugh a little too defensive about his run-heavy offense?
Yeah, okay, so Harbaugh was asked, I guess, about their offense, which has been, you know, seventh in the NFL. It was the league leader for rushing offense in the last two seasons. But he seemed to get a little defensive of it. So let's hear what he had to say.
It goes back to the same criticism that we've heard for the last 3 years about not being the type of an offense or the type of a quarterback that some people want to see. And that's just, we're just going to have to live with it, because Lamar Jackson's won a lot of football games here. And our offense has won us a lot of football games here. And we're not apologizing for that for 1 second. We are going to improve it, no question about it. We're going to go to work to be more precise, more efficient, better at what we do. That's what we have to do, be better at it. And we'll leave the criticism to the critics. And when they're ready to, you know, coordinate their offense and put their product on the field, I'll be looking forward to competing against it.
Look, I'll let these two give you the smart football take on this. But as somebody who has studied defensiveness in people and what it is and what it means and what you're protecting yourself from. The difference between defending yourself and being defensive is that usually you're covering up something you don't want to take a look at. And in this case, I think if we ask, is there something that Harbaugh could be covering up with his answer to this question, it would be that if Lamar Jackson is such a big piece of this offense and the way that you see it, well, then an extension should be coming soon, because you basically just handed his agent a thing that says we've built this around him. We believe in him. He is the direction that we're going in. You'd like him to have a long-term contract.
I thought you were going to say the thing he's covering up is his mouth, which it's great that he was wearing a mask the whole time, but I was like trying to see if he was defensive. And I was like, I can't really tell because I can't read him right now. But the lips are moving very aggressively. On one hand, I am sympathetic to John Harbaugh's argument. The Ravens, as Katie said, had a good offense. They were 11-5. They won a playoff game. And people talk about this team like they're the kid in class who glued his hands together and ate the paste. Okay? Like, they're good. But we have seen in the postseason, defenses make smart adjustments to their run game. The Bills played a lot of base and really keyed in on the misdirection. And this Ravens offense has not been able to counter, to make adjustments with the pass. Right now, the four teams left in the playoffs are ranked first, second, third, and fifth in passing offense. You do have to have that piece in your game. And while the Ravens have an excellent rushing attack, and they shouldn't apologize for that, it does seem to me like Lamar Jackson, Greg Roman, and the front office, which needs to add pieces, need to recognize that part of the game as well.
Yeah, there needs to be a renovation on offense, as much as they still want to remain a Lamar Jackson run-focused team. My main takeaway, though, is that I wish we all had a boss like John Harbaugh, not just because his mask matches his outfit, which is very inauguration chic. That was just very fast forward of him. Great move by John Harbaugh. It's also because he knows how people like us would jump upon Lamar Jackson if you gave people like us just an inch of daylight. Like, John Harbaugh, this entire time he's had Lamar Jackson, has been a dream coach for Lamar Jackson. And I say that knowing the limitations schematically that Mina alluded to. I say that because when Lamar Jackson looked awful in that first playoff game of his career, John Harbaugh left him in, knowing if I take him out, this is going to start a whole other storyline. The following year, when he loses another playoff game, John Harbaugh knows, okay, they're going to jump on my quarterback. I'm never going to feed into the narrative that Lamar Jackson himself acknowledged that he struggles in the postseason. And now, after this latest flameout, which is, I think, very valid in terms of a platform of criticism as to why you guys maybe need someone like the guy the Bills had across the field and Stephon Diggs. Like, why don't you have that guy? Why are you making Lamar Jackson do all this work on his own? He is still saying, number one, all you guys need to know is that I love Lamar Jackson and he will get all the support he ever needs from me. And that just made me feel warm and fuzzy inside.
Me too, but I will say I was curious to see why John Harbaugh didn't come out and defend Lamar Jackson when we all said that he pooped his pants.
Because,
where was he? Yeah, that's a good point.
Because he obviously
he needed a friend.
Pooped his pants.
Up next on HQ.
Getting called a flapper by either of those guys is like being called long-winded by Pablo. And you can't say anything because you just talked for 45 seconds uninterrupted.
Do you question who is more right, Marcus Smart or Joel Embiid?
Ooh, gonna be a tough one. And we'll try to forget that I am a Celtics fan and Pablo is a 76ers fan. But Marcus Smart and Joel Embiid have had beef since 2017, I think, and they both clearly love a good flop. But let's hear what Marcus Smart had to say about Joel Embiid.
It is tough, especially when, we got our hands up a lot of the times, and, he flails and he gets the call. And then down on the other end, we got our guys attacking the rim, getting a lot of contact, and we're just not getting the whistle. It's tough to play like that.
It's
tough. I mean, If the roles are reversed, I do it every time. I mean, I do it on two. Every time I threw my arms up, every time I got touched, I'm going to the free throw line.
Right. It's quite an if-then statement.
Rhythm that way when you shoot 21 free throws alone, and they allow you to hack on the other end.
All these flavors, Marcus, and you chose salty. But Joel Embiid had something to say back. Let's hear what that was.
Marcus Smart just told me that I flail a lot. Come on. I'm sure he knows himself and he knows his game too. You know, he does a lot of that. And I don't think I do. I mean, if you watch basketball and you're a student of the game and you mm-hmm. actually yep. pay attention
to the game. Student
of the game! You'll see, right. like, every single foul. I get fouled. I guess I'm just smarter than everybody else. I just take
advantage.
I just take advantage of a lot of guarding me. You can call that, I don't know, basketball IQ.
You could call it that. You could call it that. I don't know if you should. This is beautiful to me because it encapsulates so many issues in society. It's two guys willing to diagnose a problem in someone else who are then like, but not me. But that's not me. I don't do that. He does that. I'm just smart.
Just how dare Marcus Smart say any of this? That's where I mean, look, that has a real Joey Chestnut complaining about other people eating hot dogs vibe. Like, all you do, the only reason we really ever talk about you is because you're a professional stuntman level flopper. That's why we're here. And so Joel Embiid, who is like a modern day Shaquille O'Neal, who never gets officiated fairly, I will point out he has a point underneath all of those sort of Real Housewives kinds of responses he had to Marcus Smart. Mm-hmm. I think Joel has a really good point here. I watched that game. He deserved to go to the line about a bazillion times. And obviously, I hope he continues to.
Getting called a flapper by either of those guys is like being called long-winded by Pablo. And you wow. can't say anything because you just talked for 45 seconds uninterrupted.
That was like a good
on a do you
25.
Question, by the way. Yeah, this isn't question. The A block, Pablo.
Oh, by the way. I should remind you guys, Joel Embiid was advised by doctors to fall a lot. That's actually a story. Mm-hmm. Google it. He doesn't just fall randomly. He falls because
nobody's
he needs
arguing
to distribute
if it's a good,
the physics of his body on
strategy.
The basketball court. So,
no one's saying it's a bad strategy, but just say it's what you do. Just say that what you do is what you do.
Do you question the Lions' new team mentality?
Okay, Man Campbell is the new head coach of the Detroit Lions, and I'll break the fourth wall here and let you guys know that this was a topic sent over to us just before we taped, so all three of us are going into this without having ever seen it, and I couldn't be more excited.
I can sit up here and give you coach speak all day long. I can give you, you know, hey, we're going to win this many games. I can't, but none of that matters, and you guys don't want to hear it anyway. You've had enough of that, so excuse my language. All right, here's what I do know is that this team is going to take on the identity of this city, all right? And the city's been down, and it found a way to get up, all right? It's found a way to overcome adversity, all right? And so this team's going to be built on we're going to kick you in the teeth, all right? And when you punch us back, we're going to smile at you. And when you knock us down, we're going to get up. And on the way up, we're going to bite a kneecap off, all right? And we're going to stand up.
What?
And it's going to take two more shots to knock us down, all right? And on the way up, we're going to take your other kneecap, and we're going to get up. And then it's going to take three shots to get us down. And when we do, we're going to take another hunk out of you. Before long, we're going to be the last one standing, all right? That's going to be the mentality.
I mean, I do. I respect that he's like, I could give you coach speak and say we're going to win this many games, but I know the only numbers you guys care about are the kneecaps and body parts we're going to take off. We're going to get knocked down three times. On that second time, I'm going for a kneecap. Fourth time, going for a hunk. I'm going to kick you in your teeth. Football.
On the sixth time, though, I'm going to gouge your eyes out, and then I'm going to put them in my mouth and chew on your eyeballs and put them back into your eye sockets, and then I'm going to swallow the remaining flesh that I also consumed when I was gnawing on your leg earlier. Are we just talking about cannibalism at the end of that speech? What just happened?
He revealed his entire game plan. I don't know how you could possibly say he didn't tell you exactly what he was going to do, and you know exactly how to plan for it now. Wear more pads.
Sounds like I'm not the only person who went down the Army Hammer Google rabbit hole.
Oh, boy.
Tonight at 10 p.m., Knicks and Warriors.
Ah, all right. I'm probably intrigued. I'll say yes. Here's why: the Knicks are pretty good. And you got to think Tom Thibodeau is probably very happy about that as the coach of the good Knicks. But he was asked about his happiness, and here's what he had to say.
Hey, Tom. Happy birthday. I mean, is it true that you're actually never happy, even with a 30-point win on your birthday? And I guess also, what do you think of Quickly's touch on the floor with those floaters and just the shot selection there?
And you're right. I'm not happy unless I'm miserable.
I think you focus on the same thing I did, Mina, which was like, that was four questions in one, sir. You have overstayed your time. You've got to ask the one question, please. But he did say he's only happy when he's miserable, which I think I can probably relate to. Pablo, are you intrigued?
I am intrigued. I like that we're all talking about how Thibodeau and the Knicks should be happy when they are 7-8. Like, what are we doing here? But Tom Thibodeau does have a history of being confusingly happy. Do we have the time he was on ESPN as our colleague?
Oh, my God.
Oh, I forgot about this. Oh, my God. That smile.
Oh, my God. Michelle Beadle, the universal donor of chemistry, was like, what do I do with this? It's like, not even looking. No, you're looking at the camera. You gotta look weirdly into middle distance, Pablo. Mina, are you intrigued?
Pablo, put that face away right now.
I can't.
What you just saw there with Thibs, that's my worst nightmare, is to lose sound in my ear and have everyone else on a set be talking about a serious topic. Like, I don't know, you know, something very intense, like an injury. And for me to just be like,
all right, that's our show. You can find more Pablo Torre, who's actually on this side, ESPN Daily, the podcast, Mina Kimes. You can see her on NFL Live or listen to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny.
You got to do the studiously neutral face so that you don't look too angry if it's a lighthearted topic or too happy.
Oh, yeah, Lenny said, ask a woman. If you never know what to do with your face on TV, it's always a good idea to ask a woman. We have mastered the I'm smiling enough so you won't tell me to smile, but not really smiling because I know where this topic's going to go.